Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.
I did hundreds of arrangements and recordings with the absolute best in the business. Louis Armstrong, Count Basie, Sarah Vaughan, Clark Terry, Dizzy Gillespie, and my buddy Ray Charles.
To really describe the true soul in his arrangements, I can't really put it into words. It's just a feeling that you can feel it all down in here, and before you know it, you're tapping your toe, you know.
With the work came money, and with the money came temptations. Women and money and work came together, and I embraced them all. I was at a higher altitude than I had ever dreamed possible, but I didn't know what was coming.
Who knows what's coming? That's a clip from Quincy. It's a documentary currently running on Netflix, which relates the life and times of the legendary music producer Quincy Jones. John Fardy joins us once again. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Odd thing even about that clip.
Yeah.
He names out a lot of legendary musicians, but doesn't name Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing about it was that you would think, and this is part of the rub of this documentary, that that would be a massive part of it. It's a very small part of it. He spends about 5 minutes on him, barely touches Bad, the album. It's mostly just Thriller and a bit about Off the Wall. And probably the reason why he does that is because this, like, I claim to know a lot about music, but I'd forgotten or never knew some of this. This guy, Quincy Jones, has been involved in so much music and just popular African-American pop culture that it's mind-boggling, because he started so young. He's done everything, including like starting the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. He took in a lot of the rap guys. I mean, he is titanic in terms of what he's done for African-American music and popular music of the 20th century, and still to an extent continuously so. Now, I don't want to go down any rabbit holes here, because this is a music documentary. We kind of live in the golden age of music documentaries. There's been some brilliant ones in the last 10 years, and I adore them. I mean, I hate the Eagles, as the dude says in The Big Lebowski as well, but I watched a 4-hour documentary about the Eagles a while ago, because I just love a music documentary. It's just the material, and a lot of them tend to be the same, because what you tend to have is this person, male or female, with this prodigious talent, they've some trauma, they achieve huge success, then they either hit the drugs, depression, not to be flippant about it, something bad happens.
Well, of all the people he named, an awful lot of the people he named have exactly that story.
And then they find redemption of sorts. But in fairness, this is a bit different, because it works in tandem. What you have is him and a few other people, serious hitters like Bill Clinton and Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. He's quite the name dropper, but maybe he has every right to be. They narrate his life, and it's a fascinating life. But in tandem with that, you have this film crew kind of directed by his daughter, Rashida, who people will know from Parks and Recreation, wonderful actress, following him for, I think it was 5 years. At this era of his life, he's 85, and he's still drinking at the start of it. He stops. You hear 911 calls, and he's still working really hard. So you see his whole life, but his current life as well. And it's pretty brilliant for the most part, just because of all he was involved with. Like, he was this trumpet prodigy on the south side of Chicago, and he put up with this horrific racism. You know, he was practically crucified to a wall once by a gang. His mother had serious schizophrenia. He returns to his house when he's successful, and you see the bed she was strapped down on. I mean, this was a rough life, and he came really good. I mean, he worked with Duke Ellington. He worked with Frank Sinatra. Frank Sinatra actually got kind of Vegas desegregated. The black performers weren't allowed in the casinos. Sinatra. Now, there might be a bit of hyperbole here, but in a very Sinatra kind of way.
I would say it was probably some of Sinatra's friends you didn't say no to.
Yeah, kind of went and said, Quincy Jones is the best musician in the world. He walks through any casino with me, kind of thing. And you have all that. Then you have the Michael Jackson stuff, which is quite tame, because there's not that much of it. And I think a lot of people would tune in for that. But he's done so many other things. I think you'll find it a rollicking 2.5 hours, to be honest. But as I say, the only thing that's slightly, there's a lot of him sitting around and Kendrick Lamar and Dr. Dre and Colin Powell kind of fist pumping him, going, you the man, and him going, no, you the man. Well, maybe I am the man. There's a bit of that, but it's forgivable, because as I say, he is this colossus of music and popular entertainment. So very entertaining.
Though I suppose his life story, even though, as you said, the early part of his life was quite tough. Mm. But, you know, once he started to get some success, the rest of that bit, that story arc you mentioned at the start, isn't really his story. He's been married a few times, but...
You mean it's all the people who he worked with?
Yeah, by which I mean that, you know, there hasn't been that arc. I mean, there's a familiar... Say jazz musicians.
Yes.
There's a familiar story with jazz musicians in the post-war years that loads of them went to Paris because jazz became very big in Paris during the war.
Yeah.
And they go to Paris and for the first time in their lives, they don't experience racism on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And then they go back to the US and go, I'm this big deal in Paris and this guy won't let me into his shop.
Yeah,
And that had a profound effect on the psyches of a lot of these people. Where and again, you know, a lot of them turned to drugs, and it was all very tragic. There isn't that tragic aspect to Quincy Jones's life.
No,
it seems that things have been quite nice, really, after that point.
But at the same time, I mean, in the mid '80s, he has this crisis of call it depression or isolation, where he feels he's just been working for years and years and years, which he has. He feels like he's lost touch with his family. He appears to experience something along the line of anxiety attacks. So he does have a kind of road to Damascus moment, apart from the fact that then you find him in his 80s kind of saying at one point in the car with his daughter, what time is it? I can use a drink around now. And Dad, it's 11 a.m. So there are those moments. But yeah, his life was pretty rosy from about the age of 30 on. But I mean, you know, divorced as many times as I, or more times than I can remember. So he had problems in his life. But I don't want to say it's sanitized, but certainly there might have been a corrective dimension to it, because in the early part of this year, he gave a GQ interview and a Vulture interview, and he came off sounding a little bit crass, talking about having 22 different girlfriends, all half his age, made some remarks about the history of Richard Pryor and Marlon Brando that you can Google that a lot of people weren't happy
with.
Which
is allegedly,
Allegedly. Now, interesting, Richard Pryor's second wife came out and said Quincy was right on the money. So anyway, that's just a Google away if you're interested in that. So yeah, maybe it doesn't have the kind of fall from grace that a lot of these do in the latter part of his life, but it's still fascinating. And his take on kind of modern day race relations is still pretty interesting as well. And he's still never far away from his childhood, which is quite emotive at times, that racism he really felt in Chicago. Plus, his mother was a deeply, deeply troubled woman and left him with this profound kind of work ethic, you know?
Yeah. Right, we'll move on to a few bits of TV news. And Sesame Street is introducing a new character.
Yeah, well, she's a character who's been there for a while. Lily, she's a pink Muppet with these multicoloured braids. And she was brought in, I think, it's 50 years next year. It started in 1969, Sesame Street. And they've always had skin in the game in terms of presenting the world in its many different shades of all sorts of things. And she was a character who talked about food scarcity before. She's been on Sesame Street before talking about not having enough food. And what they've said now in a recent episode is she's crying to one of the teacher people on the street about not having a home, and they're living in all these different places. And, you know, it's weird. It's kind of a meta thing. I watched the YouTube clip, and, you know, it's sad, obviously, to hear kids talking about homelessness. It seems ironically even sadder when it's a puppet on Sesame Street, because I watched the clip there. Now, the headline's slightly misleading, but maybe it isn't. It's on their YouTube channel, which is a big deal for Sesame Street now. So it's not being shown on terrestrial TV in the States, but I'm not sure if that dichotomy really matters anymore. So hats off to Sesame Street. You know, in 2002, in the South African version, they had a puppet who... or I think you technically call them Muppets if they're on Sesame Street. But
yes, they're Muppets,
Sorry. Yeah. Who had HIV, and that was back in 2002. So they've always been at this, Sesame Street.
Yeah. Now, we did hear already that there was going to be so kind of the next Star Trek series is going to feature Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah.
Now we know when it's going to come out.
Yeah, late 2019. And Patrick Stewart shared a photo and kind of said, you know, we're all here. The future looks bright. So it's definitely happening. They've got some good writers on board. I always get very scared whenever there's a Star Trek story, because I get things wrong when I talk about Star Trek, because I don't know what they're. And there is a legion of people out there to tell me how wrong I got it, as I experienced once before when we discussed Star Trek.
Right, okay.
But it's going to be called Picard, as I know, and it's going to happen set kind of 20 years after the Next Generation.
Okay.
So Trekkies, I'm not even sure if you can use that term. I think that may be offensive.
There's Trekkies or Trekkers,
fans.
And I don't know what the difference is.
Yeah.
Somebody will text in and say what the difference is.
Oh, they will text in. I can assure you of that.
Well, it probably is roughly 20 years since the Next Generation series was aired, so that's about right. But they have Michael Chabon writing on it.
Like, I know.
These are serious heavy hitters.
Serious heavy hitter. But this is the way TV has gone now. It's no longer the poor relation of cinema as we know. So, you know, TV shows like this are peopled with these great writers and showrunners now in a way that they never were before, you know.
Right. And there's another Star Trek series planned called... Are these all going to be on Netflix, by the way? Right?
Apparently so, yeah. And they've said that one of them might even get a cinema release, so...
Okay, cool. Lower Decks, another series.
Yes, Lower Decks, yeah.
Presumably this is like The Cleaners and stuff.
One would have thought so.
Yeah, standing
dusting
around smoking fags, you know, around their, with their mops and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And
Picard's in a bad mood today, that kind of thing. Yeah.
True Detective Season 3, they have released, like, the titles.
The trailer, and odd move, they've released the titles of the first four episodes and small synopsis of them. Because, you see, it has a, I won't say a troubled past, but as you know, True Detective, when it started
Series 2 was crap, yeah.
That, hey, you said it better than I could. I was going to go into a long preamble about how good Series 1 was. Series 1 was brilliant. Series 2 was crap. Even though Colin Farrell was very good in it, it was weird. It didn't make sense why it didn't work. They've clearly, for Season 3, gone back to how they intended how Series 1 was. Marcella Ali, who was brilliant in Moonlight and won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor, is going to play a detective who's haunted by a case, who has a true crime filmmaker with him investigating this old case, which is kind of interesting. Stephen Dorff is going to be in it as well. So people are hopeful. The trailer looks good, but it's only 3 minutes, you know.
Right. Okay, we do have to take a commercial break. A couple more shows to talk about after this. 53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. John Fardy is still with us. He was telling us that on Sesame Street, they're going to introduce a homeless character. Somebody wants to know where you can watch Sesame Street. What channel? Well, that's a good question. It is on, as John said, it's on YouTube and Amazon Prime. I don't know if it's on terrestrial telly.
I see plenty of kids' TV and I never see it on any of those channels, you know.
I love Sesame Street. My daughter and I watch it all at the weekends on YouTube. Mm-hmm. 50 years on and the essence is still the same. We love it. Someone else says, hasn't one of the Sesame Street puppets always been homeless? He lived in a bin in an alleyway. Still a good thing for them to do either way. And that was Oscar the Grouch.
Yeah, I don't think that was a statement on homelessness. That was
No, it wasn't really. It was just they're just trying to be humorous, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly.
Can John recommend a new box set to start? I've nothing on the go and feel a hole in my life.
There's loads. Where do I start?
Yeah.
Now you did mention Sinner on Netflix.
Yeah, I'm actually we're on series 2 of The Sinner, and
it's great.
It is great. And Bill Pullman is I really like the character he plays.
The Staircase. Has anyone rewatched Frasier recently? I saw two episodes the other morning. I thought this is one of the best comedies ever.
Frasier is like one of those kind of, it's on, you know, it's kind of on weekend mornings on Channel 4.
Well, it's
four.
On every morning, weekdays on Channel 4. They show two episodes. And I watched two on Monday. I thought this is one of the funniest things ever. By the way, Deadwood, it's a great, and it's not on Netflix. You'd have to actually go out and buy a tangible DVD as far as I know. Brilliant noir western show that they're making a movie of. One of the best box sets ever. Possibly just after The Sopranos in terms of the best TV show ever, I would suggest.
Oh, wow.
Bold statement, right?
Bold statement there. Okay, time for Vic and Bob. They're back. Their big night out was on BBC 4 Wednesday at 10 p.m. Here's a clip.
Did you go to a London wig shop?
Yes, I did. One in North London, yeah.
What was it called?
Wigs and Pigs. Yeah, pigs around the back, wigs in the front.
Wigs in the front, yeah.
It's a beautiful piece. It makes me a real London guy. Yeah? Beautiful smile, walking around with a bit of pepper in my pouch.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Well, can I unveil it tonight?
I'd like to see it,
I'd like you to be first to see it.
It'd be nice. Gordon shows it,
Pop just it think, on. London guy, yeah?
Yeah.
Hey there, London guy. It's not bad, is it?
I really like that.
It's a London.
No, it looks good. It looks
it's
really
great,
nice.
Isn't it?
What, it's Kirk Douglas?
No, you're near.
Captain Kirk?
It's Captain Kirk,
is it?
There you go. Vic and Bob's big night out. I suppose, John, if you didn't like them the first time, there's no change.
You've got it.
Yeah.
You're being pithy and accurate today.
Thank you.
I like it. I remember 1990, this would have been on Channel 4, and we were in third or fourth year, and I remember the first night it was on, all the cool kids in school watched it, and I was like, this is bizarre. I don't get this. I remember watching it again the second night, and it slowly. And it was the first time I'd ever like understood what surreal meant. I remember they were just talking away, and Vic said, "At this time of the evening, I like to put a medical dish under a squirrel and grab the squirrel." And it was just bonkers. Mm. And you either find that hilarious or you don't. There's a fine line between being surreal and funny, or kind of being surreal and not funny and crap. But they're the former. But you either like it or you don't. If you didn't like it in 1990, you won't like it now. And just to backtrack, in case people don't know, I think your audience probably do, but Vic and Bob was this cult show from the 90s. It was actually called then Vic Reeves Big Night Out.
Yeah.
And it was meant to be originally, people have forgotten this set, I was going to say pastiche, but really it was a piss take of kind of variety shows that by the early 90s had really fallen off a cliff and were seen as a vestige of another age, or whatever. And Vic would come out and just do bizarre things and do bizarre songs, and they'd all these characters and they'd be into different voices, and it took a while to get into, and Bob Mortimer back then was kind of a sidekick, and they were just hilariously surreal is the best way of describing it. And you know, I was thinking something like The Mighty Boosh, people said that was surreal and hilarious. I just thought that was surreal and not very funny. So it doesn't always work, but I think
And in fairness, they were the first of that sort. There was a whole series of programs that they kind of opened a door for.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they got, I don't want to say less funny, but they got less surreal. Like they did Shooting Stars and that was very funny and all.
Yeah.
But this is them back doing that. I keep saying surreal. I need another word than surreal. Anyone want to text in? But that madcap, no real rhyme or reason, but not no rhyme or reason to the point of not being funny. Like Bob says in one of the episodes, you know, how do you prepare your turkeys for Christmas? And he said, well, I usually sit them down and tell them it's going to be rough, you know, and that kind of thing. So there are jokes in there as well. And what they're doing more of in this new series, which is on BBC Four, by the way, which might be quite telling, I don't know, the fact that it's not BBC One or whatever. But anyway, is they do these musical numbers at the start. And in the one last night, they had this thing about Elton John played by a character who looks nothing like Elton John in the toilet of a plane, and he was answering questions by the amount of times he defecated. I saw that,
and the way he answered was by pooping. Yeah.
Yeah. It was funny when you watched it, I thought, though. And then he comes back at the end. Oh, it was just hilarious. But then, out of nowhere, because they have this thing called Novelty Island, which was in the original series, which was meant to be a kind of show up of like the Generation Game or Stars in Their Eyes or something like that. And George Ezra came out, you know, shotgun, like a hot dog or whatever it is, right? And he came out and like was playing the guitar, and then they kept interrupting him and gave him a bus pass and then started turning off the lights. It made no sense, but I couldn't stop laughing. And like, that's, dare I say it, genius, you know? Because it's easy, like kids don't make sense. It's easy not to make sense, but to not make sense and be hilarious is great. And this is great, but you'll either love it or not love it. Or hate.
Somebody wants to know, is you'll re-ca-ca-ca-ca. That was Shooting Stars, though, I think.
Yeah,
that was.
Yeah.
That
was some of their catchphrases. The famous I heard on 2 weeks ago, you wouldn't let it lie.
Yeah. Would
you? That one is in it. Because that was what they were famous for in the early days.
Vic and Bob pan fighting, if they did nothing else, says Neil.
They must have pan fought back in the. I don't remember. Yeah. There's so many different characters. That
there
was,
yeah. There was.
The
oh, they would hit each other in the head with frying pans.
Yeah, was that not Bottom? Do you remember Bottom did that with?
Yes, they did. I think they did it too.
Yeah.
But maybe it was one sketch.
Yeah. But you're right. They were the real torchbearers of a whole load of comedy that came in the 90s that never would have happened had it not been for them. Like, they really were influential, you know? What's really funny as well is, you know, corpsing, as we call it in the business, trying not to laugh. They really don't care if they do or not. They do it really well the way they corpse, because they're constantly laughing at their each other's jokes, which can be infectious. Not in a Beavis and Butthead way, like, you know.
Well, yeah. I thought they originally ran out of steam because initially it seemed like they were corpsing and there was actual joy in it. But then it seemed a bit too
forced.
I don't know, not even forced, but just a little bit rehearsed.
Okay.
This didn't seem as
rehearsed corpsing.
Yeah, rehearsed corpsing. It's it's hard to do. Hard to sell, I would have thought. Right, our third show is running on TG Cowers at 9:30. This is Hector in Saigon.
Bien Shamar, I make the Bud Hereford Fuish of All August Nirvana and Winter Mock. Con Ratavet Orhu, August Conan Fear Enlightenment to Kinchu, Bean Orhu Zach Karma Akohu. Den ganáchuin é seo trí bhír agus airgead ofráil do na manastracha éagsúla agus na manig átiúla nar a húlann siad gach maidin trí an gors nacht.
Right, now, obviously it ends in Saigon, I should be more... He's travelling through Siberia to get there.
Yeah, oh, Siberia go Saigon, because it's in Irish, of course, as you could... That was Irish, in case you weren't aware. So he's travelling 8,000 kilometres, and it's quite the stretch. So he starts in... It's nearly... There's episode 7 and then episode 8. It was 8 parts. They filmed it back in February. He starts in deepest Siberia and goes all the way through Mongolia. It starts in Russia, obviously, Mongolia, China, Nepal, Bangladesh. Last night was in Burma or Myanmar, as we should call it now, Thailand, and then he'll end up in Saigon after going through Cambodia as well. There's just three of them. It's Hector, as we know and some of us love, a very enthusiastic travel guide who kind of ekes out the you want to call them punk aspects, maybe. Like last night when he was in Myanmar, he actually met street punks. He gets on this dirt bike track with all these dirt bikers. Now, he does investigate, you know, what makes the Burmese people so kind of seemingly happy and their Buddhist culture and all that. So there's seriousness to it. But he's led by the stuff that interests him. You see him played football a lot and playing badminton at one point in another episode, talking to all these Chinese kids about how he was so good, and Kel is playing badminton and they're all staring at him. So he's led by his own interests a lot. But I think he's a pretty good host. I mean, you know what you're going to get with Hector. It's enthusiasm up to the 11 button. You know, he's talking to his cameraman, Roscoe, the whole time. Last night in Burma, he's taken out to this plantation where he takes, I don't want to call it hallucinogenic, but they put a betel nut in a leaf, and he gets kind of drunk, and he does a lot of that kind of stuff along the way. He's, you know, he's like Michael Palin with a spice bag and a six pack of beer, kind of. And I mean that as a compliment, you know?
Yeah, but I suppose he's maybe seen by the makers of this programme as a kind of an Irish everyman.
Yeah,
he's just a bit of a lad who all of a sudden is in Siberia.
Yeah, but he's enthusiastic about what he sees and does. And in fairness, they do some pretty radical things. Well, reasonably radical. I mean, he's on huskies, ice swimming in these mad packed cities in Bangladesh, Dhaka, and like in the middle of traffic where he's about to get knocked down, screaming at cameras and stuff. So he's a lad, but he's a lad who's kind of interested in the world. And, you know, as travel programs go, it's entertaining stuff. You see a different side of those countries you might normally see if it had been Michael Palin or someone like that, you know. He reminds me actually a bit, I was thinking last night, and I mean this in a good way, of Henry, our dear old Henry McKean, in a way. His enthusiastic approach to anyone he meets.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
I think it's a good thing.
Okay. That's right. That's very complimentary to Hector.
Oh,
I must say. There you go. John Fardy, thanks a million for coming into us. We're gonna take a break after that. Bing Crosby, what was he really like?
Moncrief on News Talk.
Sponsored by Avant Card. With personalised pricing, our rates are made for you.